TikTok, 6 o'clock hour. Welcome into the second half of Sports Talk this Wednesday, January 7th. Steve Geller, the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, Charlie Long. We are here till 8 p.m. this evening. We're going to get to you after the first break with the Great Dane joining us, Morton Anderson, talking about the Saints season. And, of course, we'll get his insights. What he's seen from the kicker and Charlie Smith. And I guess we'll get a little into maybe Blake Groupie as well. Even though he's moved on to the Indianapolis Colts, getting a Hall of Famer's insights on the kicking game and also the kickoff rules in general and overall his impressions of how things are going with that in the NFL. Cajun Cannon, we were talking a little bit in the off, you know, before coming on the air about Buddy Dean. I see Big John in Mid-City is on the line wanting to chime in. Big John, what you got for us today? How you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing fine, and as you all know, I usually don't call in on anything other than Monday after the game.
Yeah.
But, you know, today's the 21st anniversary of the passing of Buddy D, and, you know, that deserves some mention, and that's why I'm calling in. I mean, he's the guy. I know, Bobby, you're the father of the Who Dat Nation, but, you know, Buddy was like the patriarch of the Who Dat Nation, and he's the one that created this massive fandom that is around the Saints, especially, you know, that listen in on the radio, because he became an institution unto himself.
Well, Big John, I don't know if you know this story, that two people why I ended up back in New Orleans and doing the radio was Diane Newman and Buddy Diliberto. Buddy had called me up and said, look, Bobby, I'm getting older. And
so how did you know Buddy from your playing days?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he was covering. Yes. Buddy and I go back. I went for even 5 years before that, when they had the Buddy D. Rose.
Yep.
I came in town with Coach Martin. I came in town to do that. So, yeah, Buddy and I went way back to the 80s and stuff. And, yeah, when I was holding out and all that, he showed up at my house at Mandeville. We talk and stuff. So, anyway... So, Buddy D, Big John, tell me, like, I'm getting old. I want you to help me. So, the plan was, I was coming to New Orleans to help him with the draft, to help him with training camp, pregame, postgame. You know, kind of, you know, like, not so he's not just by himself, because he would be 72 years of age, if I recall to his age. And then, you know, he passed away, had the heart attack and stuff. So, all of a sudden, it became that... what do you want to do, like the radio, like sports talk, like full time? I go, what? That's like a real job. I don't know about that. Because, you know, I'd been doing like pre and post game stuff. That's what I'd done for 7 years in Atlanta. You know, a little bit Georgia Tech, but mainly with Atlanta Falcons. So, Buddy, you know, say, you know, you need to come back home and all that. Look, you're from Baie Lafourche. So that was the plan. And then he passed away, Big John. And boy, how time flies. So, yeah, when you look at it, 21 years ago, because it was before Katrina.
Still living in New Jersey when that happened.
Yeah, when that all went down. So, yeah, Big John, so that's the history that I go back with Buddy and his passing. And I remember I even flew into town, went to the funeral and stuff, and then started talking. Before you know it, when I really started doing stuff was the end of March of 2005, you know, before the draft. And then now how time has flown by. So
I did get to see a DVD copy of the Buddy D. Roast. And man, oh man, I've heard the stories. I would have loved to have met the man. He sounds like one of those one-of-a-kind characters.
Yeah. No, and listen, he was so New Orleans, only in New Orleans. And I don't know if Big John and Buddy could have handled it with all this. You can't call your bookie anymore. No, it's out in the open. Everybody.
You just do it on your phone.
You can gamble. Yeah. So we talk about a different time and what's going on. So that's a total different animal.
Yeah, kids now are like, what is a bookie?
So Buddy was so ahead of his time as far as doing a little gaming and wanted to like a preseason game or something like Buddy, why are you betting on that stuff? No,
I've heard stories of like even cricket matches he was putting money on.
No, yes, offshore betting, whatever. he just loved to get involved. So.
Yeah, he loved the action.
Yeah, yeah. So, Big John, what can you recall? What would be a favorite Buddy D story you might have? So,
well, there's so many favorite stories, and I'll give you a few. But you know, you were talking about the betting. He used to have the pick'em shows on either Thursday or Friday.
I think, exactly.
and he'd encourage people to call in with their picks, and if they picked an underdog, he had the button ready to push it when the dogs would start barking on him. Yeah, but you know, he really cultivated a listenership here, you know, obviously, when you think about Buddy and his interaction with the fans and the people that called in like myself, you know, when you got outlandish or anything like that, Buddy wasn't shy about calling you out. And, of course, you got called a squirrel.
Yeah.
And being called a squirrel by Buddy was almost like a badge of honor for some of these guys, like Don Rickles, you know, making fun of you at one of his comedy stand-ups. And, you know, some guy would go off on this really angry tangent and you know, really get vehement, and Buddy would just listen to him. And then at the end, Buddy would say, so-and-so, did you get enough toys for Christmas when you were young? And, I mean, it just totally broke the whole anger. And the guy couldn't help but laugh or anything like that.
Yeah, and then he would say, Big John, how about Dr. Kevorkian?
Dr. Kevorkian, Sid on the magic carpet. I mean, Bubba on the magic carpet, Sid from Jefferson. I mean, you know, it's just amazing the characters that would call in. And they were, believe me, they had some good juice behind them. They knew what they were talking about, and Buddy just, he kind of, you know, he brought that along. And look, I'm kind of proud to say that I'm one of the guys that I call regularly. I don't call every night to the program, but I call every Monday.
Yeah.
And it's because of Buddy. He got me interested enough to be calling it. I mean, I was interested back in the days of Hap Gladi, but
yeah, Hap Gladi. It was really, that's where it all started. And Buddy right. took it to a different level. Hap's point after.
Yeah, it was,
yeah, and Hap Gladi, that Jesuit connection. You know, this going back when this is really the groundwork of like sports talk before sports talk. Yeah. You know, and Steve, that's when I just like, I'm in my 20s, I'm playing, you know, and that all came about, you know, when you talk about like fans wanting to interact with the team.
Sure.
And say whether you sucked or not. And just, you know, having fun with it. And Big John, what was his statement? He goes, "Let me say this to say that," or something like. What was?
Let me say this.
Let me tell you this about that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and his malapropisms were magnificent. I mean, when he mixed up Dante Culpepper with Dante Stallworth and called him Dante Stulpepper, I mean, that was that was the height of humor behind it. But with many of the 20-something-year-old and 30-something-year-old hoodats who didn't get to experience him, they need to actually ask their parents and their grandparents, what was it like listening to Buddy after the games, especially when the Saints weren't doing all that well. That's when it really started to get fun.
But well, also, and then how about this, Big John, to show you the impact of Buddy D, this is late 90s now, the influence and ears listening. He's the reason why Mike Ditka, I'm telling you, people won't admit this, Mike Ditka came to the Saints. He convinced Mr. Benson, that's who you need to sign. So Buddy did stand up and said, no, that's my fault, you know, because he wanted Mike Ditka. Big John, elaborate on that story.
I mean, you just said it. I mean, he was pounding, and he and Mike Ditka were, you know, good friends from back in, the, you know, from their time, and you know, like to hang out with the horses, do some betting and things like that, and he felt, and a lot of people felt at the time, Mike Ditka would have been the perfect fit for the New Orleans Saints, and the attitude, and to bring an attitude in the post-Coach Moore days to the Saints. Did it work out? No, of course not. It was an absolute disaster because Mike Ditka was not really ready to come back and be a head coach. He wanted to be more of a celebrity in New Orleans. But, you know, Buddy stood up and took the heat. And, you know, you go back, Bobby, to the celebrity roast and Coach Morrow at the celebrity roast. And I remember Coach Moore saying, I'm going to do this roast, but I'm not going to be nice about it. And,
right.
And it spoke to the, you know, they had a very tumultuous relationship as coach and reporter, because Buddy was a real Saints fan. I mean, he really was a Saints fan, but at the same time, he adhered to a certain journalistic integrity, and he asked tough questions that needed to be asked. And, you know, Coach Morrow was, you know, a U.S. Marine, a little prickly at times about these questions. And, you know, it soured their relationship for a long time. But at the end, I think Coach Morrow came to understand just how much Buddy really cared about the football team, which is one of the reasons why he came back to do the roast. Yeah, he was going to get his digs in, but at the same time, Buddy afterwards was nothing but complimentary about Coach Moore. I mean, he was tough on Coach Moore. He was, you know, hard on him during his coaching tenure. Afterwards, all Buddy would say about Coach Moore was, that's the coach that gave the Saints their first playoff appearance. And that's all he would ever say after that. He would never speak anything ill of Coach Mora. And that's how Buddy was. He adhered to his journalistic standard. At the same time, he was a fan of the New Orleans Saints.
Well, Big John, I'm glad you brought that up because we need to recognize that. When you look at influential people, you need to acknowledge, I always think, when they were born and then when they pass away. Because you gotta educate the youth, you know, not pronouncing the youth. You gotta educate the youth of the Houdat Nation to show a big part of talking about the Saints. Buddy D was laying the groundwork.
We're gonna take a break. When we get back, another legend in black and gold, Saints kicker and Hall of Famer Morton Anderson will join us right after this. Shooting the breeze with Bobby Hebert. So stay tuned on WWL right after this. We're back here on Sports Talk. Coming to you, we're going to talk about some more black and gold action with one of the greats, Great Dane, that is, kicker Morton Anderson joining us, Pro Football Hall of Famer. Always appreciate the time, Mort. How you been doing?
Doing fantastic. Ready for a great 2026 and off to a good start. So hope you guys are well as well, and always great to talk to you guys.
Martin, so what's your take on, is it just maybe working at your craft more, the training? Why all of a sudden they go, well, you better make the 50-yarder. Where now it's almost like, well, somebody eventually kicked a 70-yarder, and it's like almost a 62-yard or 63-yard field goal today is kind of like maybe what a 52, 53-yarder might have been back in your day.
Yeah, it is amazing how far they're kicking it. There's a couple of things that have occurred, I think, over the last, 5-10 years. It started at the tail end of when I was finishing up 06, 07. You had a long snapper. That's all he did. You know, back in the day, we had a center who had gloves on. He would go for a 10-play drive and then be all sweaty, and then he would have to put a different hat on and snap for a field goal. And it just wasn't ideal. So that's one component that you also now, you don't have a backup quarterback. You have the punter usually holding for you. So you have a lot of time with those two guys off to the side, not really part of the rest of the team they practice, and then you can plug back in. But that's a lot of quality right there. There's a lot of time where you can get it right. And then, they're kicking the K-balls now that they're given, I think, at the beginning of the season, and they got them all year. So they can do whatever they want to those footballs. And they sure look different than the ones we were kicking back in 82, 83. They look like balloons. So that adds to a little bit.
Right.
But I'm not trying, sour grapes. Listen, the guys are very good now. They start at an earlier age, and they have really good coaching moving through and up. So, back when I was playing and before, if you were a foreign soccer-style kicker or soccer kicker, or soccer player, let's get that guy, the Tony Fritzes, the Horst Muehlmans of the world. It's come a long way. Most of the kickers now are American-born. Our guy's Irish, and he's pretty good.
Yeah, and I always say it's entertainment. Wouldn't you want the best ball you could kick? I can remember more back in the day. Wouldn't you want the best ball you could throw? Because they'd whip out these brand-new balls out the box. They'd be so slick, we'd have to put them in the dryer and have the equipment guys rub them down. I remember talking to Jim McMahon about this. Is that, do you know the NBA, don't you want them to shoot the best they could shoot, a high percentage? They do not play with a brand-new basketball. It's broken in. Same thing, like if you throw in a ball in practice, it's not like, oh, you're cheating. Well, why couldn't you throw the best ball you could throw or kick? To me, that was just common sense, the NFL, to take that approach. Now, go ahead.
Well, I just want to make a point that when we were playing, we were at the mercy of the quarterback. So if the quarterback, wanted the ball a certain way to throw, he trumped because he's going to handle the ball 70 plus times a game. I'm going to handle it. My foot's going to touch that ball maybe 6 to 10. So whatever the quarterback wanted, I'm talking about before the K balls. We were all just kicking whatever the quarterback said. So, my thing was I would go and make friends with that guy and say, hey, Are you good with? And if he had big hands, it was no problem, because if you have big hands, you can deal with a ball that's a little more round. But if the guy had small hands, I was screwed, because he didn't want us to touch the ball.
You know, Martin, looking at the distances now, and obviously we had to change kickers, and both still kicking in the NFL. You know, one goes to the Colts after we let him go. And his name's slipping my mind now.
Blake Groupie.
Blake Groupie. Yeah, what am I kidding? Yeah, Blake Groupie. Now we're going with Charlie Smith. I still want to say Smythe when I see that name, but I know it's Charlie Smith. But the question I have for you, and I know the special teams coach, Coach Galliano, has to be aware of this, is that, you know, either if you make the kick, we win the game. If you miss it, you lose. And the one thing that didn't bode well for us this year, and it could come down to, you know, whether you're in the playoffs or not, if you look at 50-plus field goals, opponents were 10 for 10, where we were 7 of 12. Then you look at 40-plus yard field goals, opponents were 9 of 11, and we were only 5 of 10, 50%. Mm-hmm. That right there could be all the difference in the world, whether you're in the playoffs or not going forward. So if Charlie Smith wants to keep his job, and he's missed some 40 yards, you got to make those. It has to be like a long extra point.
I used to say you had to make everything 40 yards and in, and now it's the standard's higher. And now it's basically
50 yards in. Yeah.
You got to make everything 50 yards and in, and then we'd like you to be at, you know, 80% 50 yards and out. If you can be at 50% 60 and out, we're okay with that. So the standard has completely changed. So, and it's moving really fast. But you're right. I mean, the money kicks, I always said 30 to 45 yards. I'm going to get 80% of my kicks. And that held through. If you look at the breakdown of my 25 years, most of the kicks, I think my average was 39 yards. Out of 2,544 points, I was right around 40 yards. I think it's second in the history of the league. Longest made in the league over a career. Vinatieri's up there, and I think Tucker was up there. He wasn't quite, you know, he didn't have – as many years, but so it's interesting. You're making a valid point. Back to your question, yes, you have to make 50 yards, and then you pretty much got to be perfect. And you got to make them too, like the makeable ones. You know, like a 38 yarder, and it's not sexy to talk about. Sexy to talk about a 70 yarder and a 65 yarder, but those have the same value. We keep forgetting. I mean, they have until they start giving 4 points. For longer kicks,
right?
They have the same value, and man, I put a lot of emphasis on those medium kicks when it mattered, and it wasn't necessarily last kick of the game, but it was maybe in the fourth quarter, end of third quarter, and ended up being the last score because of our defense was so damn good.
Right, right. No, that's the difference whether you win or lose, where you get to whether you at 8-8 or you 10-6. Or 11-5, those game-winning kicks, and you came through a number of games to put us over the top. Now, Martin, I think if somebody will kick an actual 70-yarder in a game, it might be a little from the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think he's probably kicked a couple of them, like 67. And
well, he kicked a 70 in preseason.
In preseason, yeah, exactly. But, you know, they're going to count it when it's in a real game. And I can remember way back in the day, didn't the Raiders maybe one time try with Janikowski?
Yeah, we tried. We actually tried, too, like a 68-yarder one time against Tampa Bay, I think. And it was long enough, but I was wide left in the Superdome. 65 or 68, it was out there.
Okay.
And Janikowski tried a bunch of bombs, you know. And
he kicked it far enough, but not straight enough, right? Yeah,
exactly. He had to. You know, just missed the margin for error. You know, you have 18 feet 6 inches. That's how wide the goalposts are in the NFL. And it's 10 feet above. The crossbar's 10 feet up. So as you go back, the perspective changes and narrows. But I always aim for the middle because it never changes.
And, you know, Martin, the one thing I always took the approach that I feel blessed to be able to play inside. You know, yeah, it's football. You got to deal with inclement weather. But if you're throwing the football, I'd rather be throwing in a dome than in Buffalo. I mean, the wind's blowing 30 miles an hour. Just stands to reason. You know, playing in the Silver Dome, the Superdome, the Georgia Dome. Look at all the number of stadiums you played. You've kicked indoor and outdoors. But it does make a difference. So I think even if, let's say you're kicking for the Saints, that right now with Charlie Smith, you have to be more accurate. Because, look, you get to play in Atlanta inside. Now you're still playing outside Tampa Bay. It could be raining, whatever. But when you talk about kicking outside inclement weather, when you break it down, boy, it's extremely cold. The ball's different. Or obviously the wind or a training. What would be the hardest inclement situation you could be in as a kicker?
Bad footing, bad turf like Chicago, where it's sandy underneath the grass, and you slip and slide. If you don't get
your plant foot, sand. So your plant foot, yeah.
Foot's everything. But let me give some perspective to your comments. Everybody called me a dome kicker. I spent 21 years in a dome, whether it was Superdome or Georgia Dome. And Gary Anderson famously said when I got cut from the Saints in 95 and went to Atlanta, Gary said it didn't take more than long to find another dome. Anyway, if you look at the numbers, my outside numbers are actually better than my inside numbers. So for whatever, and you can fact check that.
Well, that's because you focused.
Yeah, I don't know. I had good equipment guys, you know. So, I mean, we had Silky and Dan, and we got good cleats. So the thing is, I spent a lot of time, you know, pregame figuring out what kind of turf I'm dealing with, because like San Francisco was, you know, back when we were playing, we had multi-purpose stadiums. Don't forget that. So all the outdoor stadiums were baseball stadiums too. So you had the dirt.
Fulton County, even in Atlanta.
Yeah. I can go down the list. Philly. I mean, there were a dozen of these stadiums that were multi-purpose. So they were baseball stadiums and then football stadiums, but they left the dirt in there. So for a kicker that's coming, let's say, from the grass to the dirt, that's not a big deal. Now you got to push off the dirt and go onto grass. That's an issue because you're going to slide. So there's all these considerations. Dirt to dirt, no problem. Grass to grass, no problem. Grass to dirt, no problem. Dirt to grass, an issue because it's that first, you know, initial step that gets you going. And then you got to have a solid plant. So to me, just to answer your question, I mean, it can rain, it can snow, but if I got a good plant, I feel pretty good. I can deliver the ball down the target line.
Martin, you look at the NBA has always been, and as far as in regard as being international, look at the NFL, how it's grown, and that's how we got Charlie Smith, international pathway program out of Ireland. Yeah. And look now in college football, it seems like you have maybe I don't know, two handfuls plus. Oh, where's that? Look at that punter from Australia. Look at all the damn Australians they got now. So I think that's going to continue to grow. Go ahead.
Darren Bennett was the first guy from Australia. Played with him in 2004 with the Vikings. And he's the one that initially created the Aussie punt, the end-over-end where you hit the back part of the football.
And it looks like a kickoff.
It looks like a kickoff in the air, exactly. And when it lands, it usually bounces back, doesn't bounce in the end zone. That's Darren Bennett. Look him up. San Diego Chargers for many years, and then he went to the Vikings. And, you know, a lot of those guys from Australia, they were Aussie rules players. And, you know, I don't know if they came through the pathway program. I would imagine a lot of them did. But Darren certainly brought a couple of guys over when he started out, and he played for a long time in the league, and so I give him a lot of credit for that, and it's fun to watch. It can be a real weapon to have a guy that can pin people inside the 10, because as a returner, you always ask, man, don't touch. If the ball's 10-yard line and in, don't touch it. Don't try to run it back. Let it bounce, and hopefully we get a touchback. But those punters have become so proficient in that kick inside the 20, inside the 10 even. It's kind of wild to watch. It's a weapon.
Now, Martin, looking at now the schedule and different ways to watch the NFL and also different venues, we even in South America, you're playing in Rio de Janeiro. They're going back to Mexico City. You look in Madrid, Spain. You look back in Germany, England. And I just wanted to ask you. I know you got to be part of that, too. I mean, you can't get more European than you. The Saints being associated with France. Come on, the Florida League, right?
Well, let's go, and then we'll go to Aigvev, you know. We'll bounce down to Aigvev and have a glass of Grenache, you know. But I was part way back in the day when we started the international series. Most of it was preseason, and the two cities that were most popular was London and Tokyo. And I went to Wembley Stadium, the old Wembley Stadium, with about 12 people. There were Raiderette cheerleaders, and then you had a bunch of players that were flown to London, and we bounced around the UK and Scotland, and then also played a couple of games in Tokyo. So it's come a long way, and I think the league's emphasis is obviously to globalize the game, which it is one of the greatest games, you know, in existence. And, you know, eventually I wouldn't be surprised if we see a team in London, you know, an NFL team in London, and you play. Because really, it's not any further to fly to London from the East Coast than it is to fly from New York to San Francisco. It's about right. The same. You know, you have time. You have the time zones, but you could argue that you would play several games over there. You know, the home team, whoever the home team is over there, and then bounce over here for a series of games, and it would create a scheduling nightmare, I'm sure. But it's doable. It would be fun.
Right, yeah, the money's going to talk, but the one thing we can never have, though, we got to have the Super Bowl on the good old America. Yeah,
I understand. Yeah, well, maybe put it up in Greenland, you know.
Yeah, we got to have that. Has to always be homegrown. But yeah. Martin, if they, you know, the association with artificial teams of France, now that being the Saints, and I don't think this upcoming season, but I think they will have a game in Paris, mm-hmm. and I heard. That when Greg Bensel and Ms. Benson and all went, that Monaco, that they might even have a portion of training camp in Monaco. I said, well, I'm going. I'll pay my dues. I'm signing up for that. Because I know you've been to Monaco and all, and how awesome that is and that atmosphere.
Yeah, that's about 3 hours from the house in France, you know, from Aigues-Vives. That's about a three-hour drive. Not bad. Just down the Côte d'Azur and right into past Nice and Cannes, and you get right into Monaco, and you blink, and you're out of Monaco. You know, it's tiny.
Right.
It's tiny. They do have a French league team, so they have the stadium.
The facility right?
Mm-hmm. They do have the facilities available in Monaco, and that would not be a bad place to hang for a little bit and prepare for a Sunday afternoon game in Paris. So I'd be in on that. I'll do the advanced scouting.
Yeah, and I'm gonna be a chauffeur. So I'm gonna guide the Great Dane in France. So
you'll be entertainment director, Bobby, which I know you're very good at.
Yes, at times. Yeah, I still feel like I'm 28, 29 in my mind. You know, so
absolutely.
All right, love you, bro.
I love you too. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Appreciate the time, and we're hoping that Drew Brees and Jari Evans joins the Great Dane in the Hall of Fame this year.
Yeah,
you're pretty good about one of them. That's for sure.
Yeah, no well, doubt. Yeah. Both of them deserve
love
it.
Them both. Yeah,
both deserve it. I know Drew will be a first ballot, don't you think, Martin?
Yeah, for sure. I think Drew and Fitzgerald for sure. Maybe Keithley. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, brother.
Always great to have a legend on the show. Thank you, Morton Anderson, for joining us here on WWL Sports Talk. Taking a break. We're coming back with more right after this, folks. Stay tuned on WWL. Who dat? Welcome back into Sports Talk. Getting ready to wrap things up this hour. Cajun Cannon, we're getting ready for Wild Card Weekend. And I know
I got some wild card info on the Panthers.
You got some good info, right? Some
good
intel.
Info on the Panthers. How can they beat the Rams again? What are they, like 10.5 point underdog, double digits? This is the playoffs. And they did beat the Rams, and they're playing them at home. And look, good for Carolina, though, that they got to where they're at. The last time when they were 15-1 record, last time they won the NFC South 10 years ago, and by then, you know, they've gone through three coaching changes, started 10 different quarterbacks since their wild card birth, remember, 2017. Look at Dave Canales took over as head coach in 2024. In one season, remember, as the offensive coordinator with the Buccaneers, he helped revive Baker Mayfield's career. I think he's trying to turn Little Bryce, the Panthers quarterback, and now in his third season, to make him look like a number one overall pick in 2023. But all that being said, Steve, this is the winning formula for Carolina. They're perfect, 100%. If they do this, they can 100%. Beat the Rams. 100%, not 80-90. When Carolina, when they run the ball, it's actually 31.8. So I'm going to say 32. The Panthers are averaging 32 rushing attempts in their 8 wins. How many games they won this year?
Eight.
Okay. But only 24 attempts in their losses. So don't let, I mean, Little Bryce might have to throw now and then, but if they have it, and that, you know, they know that. So they better run the ball again. I don't care if you're doing it by committee, you know, because they have the two-headed monster, 1-1-2 punch with Dotto. And so they got to run. Yeah, Chuba Hubbard. Now, this is what Canalo said about that. You know, when looking at these numbers, he goes, good things happen when you run the ball. You run the ball when good things happen. So you don't think he's aware of this?
Confucius says.
Confucius says, good things happen when you run the ball. You run the ball when good things happen.
Hmm.
So right there, Dave Canales. I mean, I don't think, like, I'm giving up the 10-9. I think the Rams has a great chance to represent the NFC, but Carolina did beat him. They rushing attempts. Remember, I always tell you that you got to attempt to run the ball. That'll make maybe Lil Bryce a little better, because Lil Bryce tore up the Rams secondary.
Sure did.
It's unbelievable. I go, what? Didn't he throw for 400 yards or something? But they still ran for at least, they still had at least 32 rushing attempts.
Yeah, the big thing for the Rams, don't turn the ball over like they did last time against Carolina.
Yeah, I think, didn't Stafford have like three picks or something?
I think he had two picks and a fumble.
Oh, okay.
Right,
okay,
so three turnovers, okay. Right. Taking a break here on Sports Talk, coming back to wrap up this hour right after this on WWL, folks. Wrapping up the 6 o'clock hour here of Sports Talk, checking in on that Pelicans game, which you can hear on WWL 870 AM. We are still in the first quarter in Atlanta, and the Hawks have a 28-21 lead currently over the Pels. We'll keep updating you throughout the show. Cajun Cannon, thanks for stopping by again. We'll be talking next week with Drew Brees.
Yeah, Drew Brees, who that, and go Saints.
Who that, folks. Talk to you next hour. Coming up, top of the hour news. I'll be back with some more also audio from Kellen Moore and Mickey Loomis right after this.